Day by day, hour by hour, the world is changing, and our music changes with it. Along with music director Michael Stern and the musicians of the Kansas City Symphony, I'm E.J. Becker, and this is Music for Our Time, a Kansas City Symphony podcast. Today, the music of contemporary composer Richard Daniel Poor, and so much that goes along with this particular piece of music. And a selection from Beethoven's one and only opera. And while it doesn't feature any voices, its unmistakable cry still rings true today. The common theme? Listening to the voices around us in pursuit of justice. We're joined by Anthony McGill, the principal clarinetist with the New York Philharmonic, the first African-American to hold a principal position with that orchestra, and he is a world-renowned soloist and chamber musician as well. Anthony, thank you for joining Michael and me.
Thanks for having me.
Michael and Anthony, we are, of course, here to talk about and listen to some beautiful music that the Kansas City Symphony has played, and Anthony, that you have played with the orchestra. But I'd like to start by asking both of you to talk about the events of the first half of 2020, as we face so many unknowns moving into the second half of the year.
It's been a crazy situation. I was on a little bit of a chamber music tour in March, early March, with my brother and our trio, and we got back, and we were supposed to do a week with Valery Gergiev conducting, and got to the first rehearsal. And I knew by that evening, while watching the news and everything, that we were not going to make it through the end of the week for concerts. And it was a scary time. I'll be honest with you. I had a really tough time with it. And it's been an interesting journey to try to, stay safe and healthy, but also just mentally to stay inspired and, just healthy all around. I think it's been a tough situation for everyone. And anyway, especially being in New York, which was the epicenter, of all of this, was really challenging.
Michael?
Well, I certainly agree with that. And I think we're all kind of facing the same thing, which is how to react to something that you've never prepared for quite this way. And of course, now we have the double whammy because the health crisis has not gone away, despite what people may think. On top of that, we have this national conversation sparked by really sad events, which unfortunately are not new to us. And all of this together just contributes to this moment of anxiety and of reckoning. And I think gradually I came to realize that the only way that we're going to, I should only speak for myself, the only way that I think I'll be able to come out on the other side is to see this weirdly as some kind of opportunity. The good old days were not necessarily the good old days. And so we have a chance to rethink what was good and what we need to get back to and what we have the opportunity to make better. I mean, I just think we have to imagine what can we be, who can we be at the end of all of this in every way, and, make it better. And that for me is the challenge and also a little bit the struggle.
Well, as you note, Michael, this ongoing discussion of equality in America has come back to the fore. And Anthony, you've recently used your unique voice to lead the discussion in a new direction. In a few minutes, I'd like you to tell us about how you did it. But before we do that, also relevant to the discussion at hand is a stunning piece of music, Concerto for Clarinet and Orchestra, From the Mountaintop, by Richard Daniel Poor. The piece, in three movements, was written for the Kansas City Symphony, and you, Anthony, were the soloist who debuted the piece with the Kansas City Symphony here in Helsburg Hall. Before we hear that performance, Anthony and Michael, talk about the composer's intent and how it played into your preparations for the debut performances.
When we started talking about this piece in particular, we had a few meals together where he really just dove into what his connection with some of the great leaders of the civil rights movement, who they were. He had so many angles that he was looking at music and life and all of these things from. And this concept of the voice of Dr. Martin Luther King being one that moved people in a way musically, that the cadence of his voice, the tone of his voice, and the, in a way, the musical meaning behind his words, based on his time, of course, as a preacher and the church and the music of the Southern Black experience, is something that really moved a nation. And that concept and the story of his life and the arc and the valley of his cadence in one speech in particular was kind of the inspiration for this work.
The inspiration came from Dr. King's very last speech, given the day before he died in Memphis, because he went down in support of the sanitation workers' strike. I remember something from that speech, because I remember listening to it and reading it when we were first looking at the score, because Richard was explicit about drawing that inspiration and all those parallels from Dr. King's rhythms of speech, from the idea of the call and response of a Baptist service.
As though the clarinet player would embody the voice of a Southern Black preacher talking to the congregation and communicating back and forth to the congregation, as though they were standing in front of the orchestra and the orchestra would respond. And then you have the kind of chronological shape of the piece as a whole, where you can kind of imagine different parts of the life of Dr. King throughout the piece.
The really touching poignancy in this is that Dr. King was saying, I've been to the mountaintop, and I don't know what's going to happen, because it doesn't matter anymore. I know we're going to get to the promised land. Those were his exact words. The unresolved hope of the promise to come.
It all stemmed from Richard wanting to write an opera. And so he had a lot of this great music, this great content. And so when he got this opportunity to write this concerto, he kind of pivoted and created this really amazing work.
Thank you.
Michael Stern and the Kansas City Symphony with solo clarinetist Anthony McGill. Richard Daniel Poor's Concerto for Clarinet and Orchestra from the Mountaintop from 2015. 5 years later, and given the national discussion that we are engaged in about equality in America, Anthony, how is this piece different today?
I think about this a lot as a musician. We think about this, which is like, why do we still play music that was written hundreds of years ago? Why do we play music that was written a few years ago? How does it have value in the present? It's because I think the human experience, humankind on Earth and in the world is so short, really, in the span of the universe, right? Even though you change as an artist and you change as a person, you get a little older, what have you, when you come back to a work and you hear it, and I've played the piece a few times since we did it in Kansas City, it creates a different feeling in the present, but it still holds its value and its power. And that power just grows and changes. And I think something about, for instance, the concept of protest, right? Protesting for what's right, being kind of an American right, is something that actually holds true when you're working on a work of art as well, is that you don't need, the piece should not go away after that first time. Maybe that was not enough to understand it. Maybe we need to be reminded of the beauty of the initial words, the initial notes, the real notes. So when you bring it back 5 years later, or you hear it again, or you listen to it again and again and again, the meaning and the effect and the intent gets, in a way, stronger.
Anthony, let me ask you a question and put you on the spot. There is a debate, and it's something which has been on my mind for a long time, and now, of course, it's in high relief. And the fact is, in our training and in our profession, we do play a lot of music that was written a long time ago, and not necessarily music that is of this moment of awareness in terms of our modern world and diversity and so forth. And there are calls from various parts that we should actually stop playing that privileged, elitist, European-centric white music, which I don't agree with, because for all the eloquent reasons that you just expressed, that art has value without taking away from any other music in the world, which is also absolutely essential to us, and without taking away the experiences and the worth of anyone else who did not have that experience from Europe from the past. What would you say to a young colleague who is just starting as a student of yours, hoping to be in your shoes as a player in an orchestra, or looking to chart a different path in music?
What I think that we need more of is the concept of inclusion into the repertoire. So as we're thinking about how to plan our seasons, that we don't go away from, I guess you could say, our initial why. Why do we play this music? And you just mentioned it, because this music is some of the most beautiful art ever created in the world. So we don't go away from that. But as we present things from the present and even from the recent past, the last century, for instance, that we broaden our scope of what it means to program, what it means to actually include the music of all people on earth that have created really great music, and not to take away from one to do the other. So I think what people are asking, and at least I would ask to answer your question, is that we go back and we actually remember, wait, who was left out of the history books? Who was left out of the museums? Who was left out of the concert halls, and why? And as we learn to celebrate the things we've always celebrated, we learn to celebrate and include the works that also deserve to be there by different people, by Asian composers, by Black composers, by, you know, Native American composers of the last century, perhaps. I think it's not about excluding to include. I think it's about including to include the large variety of great music out there. That's what I would suggest.
As we continue our discussion about the voices around us in pursuit of justice, one of those voices that is from a work that's hundreds of years old and is from a work that is played time and again still today. And it's fitting because Anthony is with us and the clarinet plays a vital expressive role in this piece. Michael, tell us about Beethoven's overture, Leonore No. 3, played by our Kansas City Symphony.
Anthony was making an incredibly profound point about inclusion and about the greatness of art in all of its facets and from all the periods of human history, and making the case that even in 2020, playing Beethoven is part of who he is. Also, let's not forget, amidst the pandemic and all of this unrest right now in our national climate, that it is still Beethoven's 250th year. So it's appropriate that we talk about Beethoven. The Leonore 3 is one of his masterpieces, and it's an extraordinarily dramatic work. What he packs into 14 minutes is pretty extraordinary. It's the entire encapsulation, not only of the narrative of the opera, his only opera, Fidelio, but the intent and drama of it in a way which was so enormous that he actually never used it as the opening to the opera, because it dwarfed the goings-on. In some traditions, it's used sometimes during the set change, because in 14 minutes, they could switch, especially in the old days when it was not quite so quick, they could switch the sets in that time, and there could be music going on. And there are three iterations, actually, of the Leonore overture. But number three is the longest and, in a way, the most evolved. But I thought of that when we were talking, because, of course, Anthony is the great clarinetist that he is. And there's something I always think about this, and tying it to the moment that we are in and the subject of what we're talking about today. After the startling opening, which is so dramatic, and the stepwise descent of the music to this very foreign place in terms of the harmony, as if you are following the jailer as he's marching Florestan down to the dungeon. Florestan's great aria at the top of the second act, the first note that he utters is this guttural cry of God. And from that despair comes his aria, which in the overture is played by the clarinet. And so I just thought of that. But if you really read the text and think about everything that Anthony was talking about and everything that we're going through as musicians, as citizens right now, the lyric there, the famous aria in German, in des Lebens Frühlingstagen ist das Glück von mir geflohen, in the spring days of my life, happiness deserted me, I dared to utter the truth boldly, and my reward are these chains. Beethoven, in his way, was meeting the moment. His aspiration for humanity and for individual freedom and for democracy is all in this music.
as we conclude our discussion of the voices around us in pursuit of justice and where we find them in music. Our guest, world-renowned clarinetist Anthony McGill, recently added his voice, his very unique voice, to the discussion. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. The events of over the last few weeks here in America, some of these dreadful murders and killings that we've seen kind of on TV, splashed all over the news and on the internet, and all of the horrible stories that, of course, are not unfamiliar to us, really sparked something in me to try to find a way to communicate. And as a musician being kind of silenced by, you know, no concerts, just the, you know, no opportunity and no place to kind of have an outlet to play. I've been playing 3, 4, 5 concerts a week for most of my life. It got me really thinking about what I could say and how I could say it. And at first it came out with some words that I wanted to just write down to myself. And then it became more of like a art piece where I was reaching out to the world to say, you know, please join me in this. This is all terrible. And we need to, you know, kind of unite and say something. So it started with like a written statement about what justice and equality and all of these things mean to me, and what the American values of freedom of speech and protest mean here and to me. So the America the Beautiful was kind of the effect of those words. And it actually was inspired by me thinking I can't say something on paper without having my clarinet to really be my main voice. People know me as a clarinet player. You know, oftentimes when people talk about things, they're like, why don't you just play the clarinet? Why don't you say it with your instrument? So I knew I couldn't, you know, say what my ideas were about this injustice in the world without playing my clarinet. And fortunately, my wife was like, why don't you play America the Beautiful, something like that. And I was like, you know, that's perfect. And the way it was just slightly altered just kind of was a spur of the moment thing. And I turned it into a piece that was slightly different than the America the Beautiful that we all know and love. Because I feel like as a nation, we're going through a period, we go through these periods often where we have to go back to the ideals of what it means to be American, what it means to be free and equal and under the law, and how I kind of rearranged the piece just slightly. And then it was almost like a performance piece when I went down to my knees. I know all of this stuff didn't happen. It wasn't premeditated, you know, it just kind of happened that day as an outlet for me to create and express something that I think that we can all get behind, which is basic fairness, basic equality, basic, you know, just valuing human life. And so it came out as this challenge to all of my colleagues, friends, but even strangers and neighbors and everyone I don't know to join me in taking two knees for justice and righteousness. And it became this kind of movement, but really it was a personal expression of frustration and pain and longing for this concept of humanity. I'm really moved by the outpouring of support that I've gotten, but mainly it helped me kind of deal with my own internal feelings about all of this.
It's incredibly moving to hear that. It's just so matter of fact and so true. It's very inspiring. And yeah, I'm honored to have the chance to make music with you, Anthony.
And it's been a pleasure to get to talk to you, Anthony. Thank you for joining us for Music for Our Time.
Thank you. Really appreciate it.
Anthony McGill is the principal clarinetist with the New York Philharmonic and a world-renowned and sought-after soloist for Michael Stern and the musicians of the Kansas City Symphony. I'm E.J. Becker. This is Music for Our Time, a Kansas City Symphony podcast. For more podcasts and more information on the Kansas City Symphony, check out kcsymphony.org.